Mark.
Let's start with a fun one, although I think he's pretty serious. So Clay Travis, who founded OutKick, he has offered to purchase a WNBA expansion franchise, move it to Nashville where he's at, name it the Nashville Balls, and he says that it will be a 100% trans organization. And he's dead serious. He says, I will absolutely do this, but we will only have men who say they're women play on the team, coach the team. It'll be a 100% trans organization.
I am putting in an application to get a WNBA franchise for my home, Nashville. It's going to be the most inclusive team that has ever existed. Only trans, only men who identify as women on the team. Our motto, one love, two balls, the Nashville Balls. We are going to be the greatest women's basketball team starring men of all time. The best women, Jesse, are men.
So here's the deal. I kind of thought that I'd never really switch careers. But I'm going to submit a resume to Clay and offer to be his marketing director for this. And the slogan's going to be, you got to have balls to ball.
Yep. You got to have balls to ball.
Yeah. And like the other thing too, is that, talk about being the warriors on the woke side, right?
I know.
We're going to adapt your version of piety and we're taking it right to the wall. We're only allowing trans people on this baby.
Yep.
Right. And how dare you say they're men? These aren't men. What kind of fascist are you? These are women because they say so.
And
so,
honestly, I think this is what has to happen. Somebody, even if it's just one player, has to do this for the good of society to put there, because all these coaches making these statements about, oh, you know, I'm not for exclusion. Exclusion is why the WNBA exists, obviously.
That's the definition of professional sport.
Right. Any sport. I mean,
is exclusion.
I'm sorry, when you play middle school basketball, you might not make the team in some places. I mean, exclusion is, and also exclusion is a very good life lesson because sometimes you just don't cut it.
You don't cut the mustard, man. And that's just the way it is. And the other thing is, and this is more of a nuanced deal, but one of the most insidious cultural dynamics that you can put forward is this idea that it's society's job to adapt to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's not. And people are like, oh, but if you think about all of this, the reason I say it is because not only is it incredibly caustic to a society because you have to endure these ridiculous statements, because if our job is adapt to you, we've got to come up with an adaptation process for every nut job that floats a crazy idea out there, right? While simultaneously teaching our younger people that's right. I was watching a video today, the way these young people talk to people and, you know, kicking a cop in the chest and doing all these kinds of things. Why do they act that way? Because they've been told since infancy that it's everybody else's job to adapt to you, that you're special. And look, you are special in the sense that you were endowed by your creator with certain unalienable rights, but you're only recognized as special based on what you do.
Yeah.
You need to do something special. If you don't do something special, nobody cares. And it's your job to adapt to society. Here's another crazy one that I thought about. When you think about the difference between adults and children, right? Adults in every capacity, pretty much in every single society that's ever been on the face of the earth, adults have foregone some type of convenience or some type of preference for the sake of the safety of younger generations, right?
Sure.
In some capacity, right? You know, limiting child work labor hours. You know, how does that limit? Well, it limits a guy's ability to make money, right? Just saying that there's all these types of things. Parents can't go out at night because I can't find a babysitter. Why? It puts my children at risk, right? Societally, we all know there's these things. A kid walks into the room, you don't talk about that, right? Well, I want to express my feelings. Yes, but you're going to put toxicity in this young one's ears. You think how insane it is that all of a sudden we now decide that protecting the machinations and effectively the imagination, and in most cases, the mental illness of an adult, we're putting the priority of doing that above the safety of our children, which is just, it's so unnatural.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And here's the other thing. If you're so committed to, let's just make it really, and I'm, you know, I'll probably tick off some people that are on our side of it. But I'm like, look, no one's anti, I'm not anti-trans. And I'll prove it by saying, if you don't have a penis and testicles, I don't have a problem with you going into a woman's bathroom. Hmm. Right? Like if you're committed to the point where you go through with the full sex change operation and all that kind of stuff, maybe that's not the right point of view. I'm open to listening to behavioral therapists tell me why that's not a good idea. I could be wrong, but I'm sitting there saying, look, I'm not opposed to that. What I don't want to see is my 13-year-old daughter walking into a bathroom and seeing a 6'2 guy with a hairy chest and an erection standing in the shower. I don't know why that's controversial.
Yeah. And yeah, you're right. So you're basically saying that that man's right to shower in a place he feels more comfortable comes above a child's right not to see a strange man's genitalia.
Yeah, 100%.
That is ever around, so nuts.
Yeah, it is. It's just insane. In every culture in history, for, maybe there's a few outliers, but every culture in history would agree to that.
Yeah.
Right. It's part of the social contract. We'll all speak a certain way because a kid walked into a room. We'll all not do this because that endangers kids. We understand why we, you know, even I don't want to get into gun rights laws, but if you pack a gun and you're going into a school, you take it out, right? For there's all these things that we make allowances for. Now, all of a sudden, the emotional well-being of a, how does that come? Because anybody that says they're a woman can walk into the bathroom, you moron. It's no just- one's worried about the person that actually got a sex change operation. We're worried about the people that are already breaking laws and trafficking children. That's what we're worried about.
The dam has to break on all of this. The dam has to break. And there's been so much momentum, obviously, over this WNBA thing. And I will say, Clay Travis is taking things a step further than like offering to buy an expansion franchise. So he has put up $10 million. And he says this is 100% genuine offer. $10 million for a head-to-head basketball game between the defending WNBA champion Las Vegas Aces and a boys high school state title team of his choice.
I want to have a boys high school team versus the WNBA Las Vegas Aces. I'll put $10 million on the line. The boys are going to win. We're going to put it on pay-per-view. We're going to make a lot of money for charity.
Why not do it? Let's do it. Like
for every single one of them, it would be more than they make contractually.
Right, if they got the $10 million on their own, but he's saying he'd split it. But even so, there's not many players per team.
Yeah, no, you're looking at 12 girl roster, 12 lady rosters, I believe. So I just think it's so weird. I put out a tweet the other day where I was like, it's still bizarre to me that this is a stand we have to take, that the sexual preference or identity of an adult supersedes the safety of our kids.
Let's hope this is the momentum we all need to change this insanity so we can focus on other things. All right. Yes. Last time on Swamp Watch, we talked about Mamdani in New York City and his government-funded grocery stores. Guess what, Zach? It turns out they want to stop people from cheating the system, right? They want to stop one person from going store to store and buying a bunch of these discounted goods from the taxpayer teeth. So how do you do such a thing? Well, you require ID to shop at one of the socialist grocery stores. Here's a clip from a news conference.
So our RFP makes very clear that this is a program for New Yorkers to be able to put food on the table, not a program for people to be able to make a quick buck through reselling. I'm going to pass it over to our EDC head, Jeannie Pack, to add some additional details.
We are looking to make sure that we target New Yorkers, whether it be at sort of a library card-esque thing. We are mindful of that. And so we're going to make sure that we have all the things in place to ensure that that does not happen.
ID. Can't require ID to vote because it would disenfranchise Black people and women who have children. Okay, so aren't you also disenfranchising their ability to put food on their table by requiring a photo ID?
You don't want them to spin it and make a profit, but you don't want borders and you want them to be able to get on the public doles without ID and send it back to their home country. Can someone explain to me how there's any difference there?
I got to say this. I just have to say it. I know I host a show called Undivided, but it's really just about just the asinine people all over the spectrum. But I genuinely don't understand how any intelligent person could support today's Democratic Party. I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't either. And I don't think you can. I think there has to be something. There has to be some part of your brain that does not work correctly because there is no logic train.
Yeah.
there is just no logic train, meaning something is broken in the gears because it doesn't, like, I'm sitting there listening to them saying, and they're rolling out the Communist Manifesto with increasing gusto and talking about seizing the means of production. And when I hear that, as a guy that studied communism, when I hear that, I look at them and I go, okay, fantastic. That's when the dog catches the car, when you seize the means of production. Historically, what's happened after that?
Well, you know,
what's happened?
The means of production goes to shit and 100% they can't produce enough and they can't, yeah.
Because now bureaucrats that weren't able to get their first job before the age of 44, in his case, 33, other than being a rapper that spoke in many different, you know, accents wherever he was, right? And lived off mom and daddy's money. Because if you have any real life experience, you have to learn these things. Why? Because it hurts if you don't. So what we've come up with the idea of just saying, hey, let's come up with the most ridiculous BS we possibly can. And then the only horse that's capable of moving that cart forward is somebody that's old, young and inexperienced enough to believe it.
Yeah.
So that's who we're putting at the front of the cart. The sad part about all of this is that this isn't one of those political debates to freak out and hand-wring over just because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work because you put bureaucratic and political decisions above capital allocation decisions. And when you do that, things break and really bad things happen. And there's never, ever been an exemption. And people go, what about Sweden? Don't bring up those places. Those are different priorities of spending based off internally generated profits,
right,
that feed sovereign wealth funds. It's not even a fair comp. Furthermore, if those countries had to pay their own defense costs, their spending priorities would be substantially different. So it's a horrible, horrible comp. Don't bring it up to me. Let's talk about Mao. Let's talk about the USSR. Let's talk about Cuba. Let's talk about real examples of seizing the means of production. You can't find a single place where it wasn't an abject disaster, right? Like just a complete mess. And so it's hard to get scary about it because it's like, hey, you know, or it's hard to get scared about it because it's like, hey, let's advocate, you know, let's start bleeding. You know, we've used that analogy before. Let's start bleeding ourselves and hope that that works. I mean, you know, it's so stupid. You know how it ends.
Yeah.
The problem is that does it have enough amplitude and energy behind it to actually gain some traction? Unfortunately, it appears like it does.
Yeah, and gain enough traction to do some damage that might take a while to be undone. And when I say I don't understand how any smart person could be a Democrat, I'm not saying like there aren't some races where, you know, individual Democratic candidates are probably the better choice, because there's also some fringe crazy Republicans as well. But like, I guess I've never understood loyal party affiliation. It's always kind of confused me. Like, I guess maybe from a journalistic perspective, I've just never wanted to attach myself to a political party. But it's also like, gosh, if you're attaching yourself to a political party, there is this sort of push that you have to, no matter what, oh yeah, Democrats and Republicans. And it's like, I don't know how you can do that these days, because the party runs the gamut of absolutely asinine, insane to reasonable.
Well, yeah, to go to your point, I mean, these same comments have made Jim Carville say that he's no longer a part of the party.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm not talking about your traditional Jim Carville, Bill Maher type liberal progressive. I'm talking about the DSA. I'm talking about the entities that are taking over the Democratic Party. Right. I'm not sitting there talking about Mike Dukakis or Jimmy Carter, for God's sakes. Right. This isn't, you know, retroactively trying to argue the ills of Bill Clinton as president, for crying out loud. This is saying, hey, socialism resulted in about 120 million deaths in the last century. Best not to revisit it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean.
Former Senator Joe Manchin, who, when he was in the Senate, was one of the most sane people. He was on Face the Nation recently with his daughter. They were talking about some organization they're a part of. But Margaret Brennan brought up this shift towards socialism. Here's what he said.
Could you ever support a self-described socialist candidate?
No.
No way. My God, no.
And even if they have some good ideas?
I support the good ideas, but how could you support some of the crazy stuff they're for? Have you seen their platform? They're for dismantling everything that we know, whether it be the structure of government, Congress itself, or the Senate they want to get rid of. And then they start talking about all the crazy things. No police, no this, no this, no that. Mm-hmm. Are you crazy? We want a crime-free area. We have to have police for that.
Yes.
We want a strong defense. We want a strong border. But if Democrats can't say that and they start lining up with the socialist demands of how, what you are to be a socialist, energy will be gone. There'll be no energy, okay? We have right now a tremendous amount of energy we're producing, and the world depends more on us than ever before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the kind of Democrat that is not offensive to me, you know. And
no.
I'm glad that there are some, even though now he's a former United States senator, who are speaking up pretty aggressively, like John Fetterman, about, you know, it might just be here and there, but all these little victories for socialists across the country start to add up, and they can derail the rest of the party in Congress if they get enough seats.
Here's the scary part of it. They don't, and this is how these things always take place. It's bizarre. It's eerie how much history repeats itself.
Yeah.
So what they're lobbying for, if you look at it at its base tenets, they're basically lobbying for a modern feudalism, right? The system that they're advocating for would absolutely magnify and blow out all of the ills that they currently see in our economies, right?
Yep.
Wealth inequalities, things like this. All you'd do is you would transfer that wealth and power to the Politburo, or you know, that's what the USSR called it, right? From the it would just go from the oligarchs to the Politburo. Here's the difference. The market at least has the keys and some control and can take that money away from that oligarch and the favor away from that oligarch at any moment. So can a decentralized government, right? When you're advocating making moves like this, while simultaneously destroying the checks and balance structure of our government, which is exactly what they're advocating when getting rid of the Senate and then making it a judicial committee that is subject under Congress, meaning you're just turning it to popular rule, right?
Yep.
So as governed by, you know, so you're basically eliminating 2.5 branches of government if you do that. So what you're doing is you're creating basically a modern feudal system where there is no ability for the electorate to pivot away from it when they find out it's broken.
Yeah.
Right. So not only is it the wrong political turn, but you're also eliminating the way in which we divert away from bad decisions. And it's just, it literally is an example of people building their own prison. And the trust, here's the other thing that I look at these young people. And I would just love and look at them and go, hey, what are the greatest human tragedies in history? Let's name them. Yeah. Okay, how many of those were perpetrated by government and how many were perpetrated by corporations? Not saying there aren't a lot of evil corporations out there. There's no horrible stuff that's gone on, right? And you and I have sat here and said, you know, I've repeatedly begged for the returning of breaking up trusts and getting rid of monopolies and evening things out. When we look at the horrors that have been, you know, perpetrated in the world, who did those?
Yeah.
Why do you trust this? Well, you like all these people. Okay, well, what happens to that apparatus when those people are gone and new people that you've never even heard their names of before take over that?
Yeah.
Right? Like you're setting up a situation. You're building a throne for a dictator while simultaneously saying you can't trust any of the elites. Who do you think is going to end up sitting in that throne? And then you'll have no legislative vehicle in which to push back. Okay. Have fun with that.
We have to hope it doesn't get to that point. It's going to take Americans pushing back and also members of the Democratic Party at this time where they're just so unhinged and focused on getting Trump out of office, even though he'll be out of office in like 2.5 years, that they're so focused on that they can't see the forest through the trees.
Yeah. The other thing that in my opinion, and I could be dissuaded of this, but from what I've seen, the other thing that we have to do is we've got to revisit the Citizens United decision. And we need to find a new way to look at this that treats corporations and unions exactly the same way.
Yes,
meaning
100%.
For those on the left arguing that corporations have too much sway, I agree with you. But in an effort to really tackle this problem, unions are the exact same thing. They're just representing the labor as opposed to the owners of the business.
Yeah, huge,
but it's the same problem.
Huge outsized influence compared to the individual. Huge. We're seeing that in Washington State. It's unreal. But on that topic, I thought I'd run this past you because I think you and I will actually agree on this. Elon Musk is reportedly planning to spend up to $120 million on behalf of the GOP in the midterms coming up through his America PAC. Does that bother you? One man basically spending $120 million to influence elections.
I'm far more worried about the SEIU dropping $32 million in our own state.
Yeah.
Go run the numbers on that nationally, yeah. Right? That's $1.5 billion if every single state put up something like that.
But it's the same
It's the same thing.
It's the same, you know, it's an outsized influence that extends so far beyond the individual and their individual votes. And
agreed.
I could look at this and like, we desperately need the GOP in this moment to keep control of the House and Senate until the end of Trump's term. But, you know, if you're going to change the rules and you can limit this sort of behavior on both sides, I'd be in favor of that. But obviously, as long as you've got the George Soros of the world pouring money in, then yes, Elon, pour as much as you want in.
In my opinion, you just hit the nail on the head, because as long as we do this tit for tat, right? Yeah. It's like, it's a pound of flesh. It never stops. It's like a blood feud, right?
Yeah.
So we have to decide as a culture that we don't want to we don't want any one party or any one body. The SEIU in this state has gotten so powerful.
Yes.
I don't know this to be true because I haven't spoken to this guy, but we have it on very, very good information that even Bob Ferguson didn't want to bring this income tax to the table. And the SEIU looked at him and said, you'll do it or we'll primary you. Even the governor, who I can't stand, and it almost hurts me to say anything that even, you know, like gets close to saying something positive about the guy. But when you get into this, when you start digging into this monster and you start realizing there is one political force in this state that matters, and there's only one, the SEIU. That it is it.
And the now, WEA.
Yeah. Okay. That's true.
I think they go hand in hand.
Yes. Yes. Hand in glove. Yep. Right. Probably. But I hate justifying that for a guy like Elon dropping, because again, we're playing. But that's why I just look at him and go, hey, can we all agree we need to take a big look at finance,
right?
Campaign finance? Yes, we absolutely need to.
Yeah, it's just no party's going to want to take that up unless at that moment it's advantageous for them. And, you know, if it's advantageous for one party, it's not going to be advantageous for the other at that moment in time. So it almost has to like reach a fever pitch where both parties, no matter what it might mean for the upcoming election, are in favor of doing something like that.
Did you hear the diatribe this weekend from Bill Maher?
Oh, God. He has so many good ones. What was this one about?
It was hilarious, where he was just going off on this whole, you got like just sitting there saying basically what we were just talking about, just going, who can support this stuff?
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to lie, you're supposed to lie in a way that makes people vote for you. Not like, you know, like just the constant communist push and the seize of production, seizing the means of production. And it was just funny to hear it coming out of his mouth. And he said a lot of great stuff. But I mean, they're just telling you who they are. And it's so crazy to watch people embrace an ideology that is just so antithetical to what's made America great, what's built the biggest middle class. You want to look at them and go, you're all for the little guy, right? There's never been a more successful middle. They go, not now. Yes, because we went away from the formula. We're not living in free markets and capitalism right now. We're living in this corrupted socialist wealth corporate welfare system, where I agree with you, but going further that way is not the answer, right? Busting up powers, busting up monopolies, whether they're political or whether they're corporate, that we got to get back to that. We need more competition. We need to produce more things here in the United States. Just exhausting.
It is. And November is going to tell us a lot, I think, about the trajectory of this country and what people are willing to stomach in the name of Orange Man Bad. All right, agreed. Zach Abraham, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.